Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Thick Ass. This is episode number 256. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and again, we got back-to-back weeks. We have female guests on the show, which is something that I really do not do enough, but I'm very happy to have Julia Lindowski on the show. Julia, how you doing?
I'm good, Kevin. How are you?
Good. Did I do all right with the last name?
Lindowski.
Ah, I was close. Okay. Very close. All right. Well, anyways, we got a ton of questions from the audience for the show. We had obviously a ton of our audience is following kind of what you've been doing for the last couple of years with powerlifting. And also now you got some really cool stuff going on transitioning to figure competition. So we're going to get into all that. But for people who aren't staying up to date on what you've been up to, can you give the audience a little bit of background on you know, who you are and what you do?
Yes, I am. I've been in the powerlifting scene since about 2000. That's mainly what I've been doing ever since I was done being an athlete. I was a Division I strength and conditioning coach from 2002 to 2009 out at the University of Buffalo. So I spent some time out there working with Division I athletes of all sports, which was a fabulous experience. Right now, I am program director of a Parisi Speed School here in the Midwest. So a bit of a transition working with younger kids, but definitely enjoy it and definitely enjoy giving them the foundational tools that they need to continue to thrive in their sport. I am married. I have two kids, so that definitely keeps me busy as well, aside from training and powerlifting. And I am currently doing some online training and nutrition coaching as well. But yeah, the switch over to figure was kind of it's been in the back of my mind for about the last year or so. And it's one of those things where it was time to venture out into something a little outside of my comfort zone and try something new. So I don't think this will last very long, but it's definitely an experience. I'm using it as a learning experience for myself and kind of a lab rat, so to speak, see how my body responds to different training and nutrition techniques. And that's currently where I'm at right now.
Well, let's start right there because, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, this is kind of a big change. So I'd love if you could talk about the process that you kind of went through, and you mentioned a little bit that it was kind of a decision to do something a little bit new. How did you come to that decision? Was it just kind of wanting to do something different? And also, can you go through some of the process that it took to transition from training for powerlifting to training for figure competitions?
The decision was, it had crossed my mind about a year ago. I had gotten to a point where my body composition was really starting to change. I had been, and I know we'll probably touch on this later, I had been doing some carb backloading nutrition protocols for about a year at that point. And my body composition was really starting to change. And really, honestly, and this might come as a shock to people, but for the first time in my life, I was actually starting to have some ab definition. And that was, you know, it was kind of an interesting thing with all of the training that I'd done in the past and really dialing in my diet. So I had thought about it last year and thought about doing a show last year over the summer, but decided to take the year and qualify for the Arnold Classic, which I did, and I just competed in about a month ago. So it kind of got put on the back burner, but shortly before the Arnold, I was talking to John Meadows, who is currently coaching me through this figure show. And, he really encouraged me to go for it and give it a shot. And it was kind of a challenge for him as well. We found a show that was only 9 weeks away. So it's probably not, as far as the transition from powerlifting into figure, it's probably not the ideal transition that most people would go through. From what I understand, most figure shows, people typically take, you know, anywhere from 18 to 20 weeks to really prep for one. So this is definitely a short thing. But based on John's experience and where I was at body composition wise, and I think it was a challenge for him as well to see if we could get me ready in 9 weeks. So that's the transition. And really, I took a week off after the Arnold from training and jumped right into some of his mountain dog training and been on that for about 3 weeks now. So we got about 6 weeks to go.
Now that you've kind of been on both sides, what do you find to be more fun to train for?
This has been really fun in a very different sort of way. Mm-hmm. I will always have a love for lifting heavy weights. Mm-hmm. There is no question about that. And I think people who know me will, you know, can vouch for that. There's something really empowering about getting under a heavy squat bar, about pulling, you know, 300 plus pounds off the floor. There's just something magical and empowering about lifting heavy weights. So that will always be a love of mine. Now, this has been fun just because of the change. It's different. There's a different mentality. You're not going to the gym for PRs anymore. You're not going for a record. You're not trying to, you know, move the most weight. This is all about muscle exhaustion. It's about, you know, that last set of leg press. You know, you have 30 reps and you have to dig down deep and find every last ounce of, you know, energy that you have and really put your mind into something different. So in that sense, it's been kind of fun to challenge myself differently in those ways. So I'm really enjoying the break. I don't have a lot of, I am still doing squats and some pressing movements, but not a whole lot of other, you know, barbell work, which is nice. So I think it's definitely giving my joints a break, which I think is important for a lot of competitive power lifters. So this has been a change. Like I said, it's only been 3 weeks, but I can definitely tell by the time this show is over, I'll be back ready to get under the bar again.
Very cool. You mentioned previously about the, you know, the concept of carb backloading, and that's something that you said you've been doing it for over a year now, but I think for a lot of the audience out there, it's something that's just starting to seep its way into, you know, the more general fitness folk out there. Can you talk mm-hmm. about the whole concept and how you've implemented it into your life and your training?
Yeah, we've actually been implementing it for about 2 years now. So my husband had come across some of Kiefer's articles 2 years ago, and you know, we looked into it. And at the time, it was, you know, it kind of seems a little out there and a little odd, but it worked. We felt great. The process was, you know, slow body composition changes, but it was, we were finding that it was working really well with our lifestyle and our training. So the idea behind it is optimizing, and this is, and some of the concepts are very similar to a lot of other nutrition protocols out there. But what we're trying to do is optimize certain hormones at certain times of the day, take advantage of, you know, post-workout nutrition, optimize fat burning in the morning and things like that. And then it also allows, and what most people enjoy about it is it allows them to have some of their junk food at night. So there's definitely a lot of sort of variations and modifications that people can make along the way. But again, the idea is to, you know, keep the fat burning process going in the morning. I typically train in the morning, so which is something that a lot of people find very interesting. So that typically I go to the gym on, you know, some coffee and some heavy cream, and my body responds really well to that. People are surprised that I, you know, don't eat breakfast, or that I typically go to training on just coffee and cream, but it's worked really well for me, and my energy levels and my strength levels the last 2 years have been the best that they've ever been, even at a lighter body weight. And then you load up on good proteins and veggies and good fats throughout the day. And then, you know, nighttime is the time to, based on insulin sensitivity and things like that, is when you're going to eat your, you know, most of your carbohydrates. So again, there's a lot of variations based on when people train, and their lifestyle. But the thing that I find with a lot of people that I help with, consultations with carb backloading is that it's so, easy to follow. It's kind of like a maintenance free thing. There's not a lot of thought process to following it. People find that it works well with their jobs, with their kids' schedule. They're not packing meals every 2 hours. They can enjoy things. They can go out to barbecues and still have, you know, hamburgers and, you know, and things like that. So it's definitely been, that's really probably the biggest thing that I get from people is that they feel good throughout the day. They're not tired and sluggish anymore. Their energy levels are great. They're setting PRs in the gym and they can still enjoy some, you know, a piece of cheesecake or some ice cream at night. So
crazy how things in this industry almost flip-flop on each other. Like you said, it's kind of going against. Like 5 years ago, I was told eat all your carbohydrates in the morning.
Right.
That's when your body is going to be able to process them the best. And everyone's right. telling me to eat every 2 to 3 hours. And now everyone's intermittent fasting. It's like kind of just running around in circles. And we're probably going to go 5 or 10 more years. And then we're going to flip-flop because there's going to be more research that backs the other thing. And people are just going to find new ways to kind of play with their body and with their body composition. It's super cool stuff. And
I think the interesting thing with a lot of that, Kevin, is that there's a lot out there that does work. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, there's kind of no right or wrong. It's, you know, for a lot of people, they've had success with other diets and they've had, you know, failures with other diets. And so I think it's finding what works, but it's also believing in what you do. If you struggle with the concept of intermittent fasting and you're not sure if that's going to work for you, and every day you go into this and you're fasting and you don't believe in what you're doing, chances of you being successful are slim. So that, I think, has a lot to do with, I mean, just like your training, when you go to the gym and you don't believe in the training program that you're doing, you're probably not going to have success with it. So you're right. There are, I mean, right now with this figure prep, I'm not carb backloading. I'm following John Meadows' diet protocol and it's working as well. So there's definitely a lot of good things out there with, you know, various other diets. But for me and my kids and my family and my lifestyle, it, you know, it works really well and it's pretty, you know, maintenance free. And so.
And it definitely sounds like, you know, Kiefer's website's the best place to go get more information on that. If people are, you know, looking for some extra info on it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, let's get into some of the questions that we got from the listeners and your fans out there. The first question coming from Jen, and it's going to hit on a couple things we talked about briefly. Can you shed any light on what, if any, compromises you feel female may need to make with regards to body composition in order to be an elite power lifter? Clearly, you need to eat to feed your training, and you need to keep your training focused on your main lifts. I'm very happy with my current level of leanness, which is sustainable for me around 15%. And I'm very interested in powerlifting, but I'm not sure what, if anything, or anything I may have to sacrifice in terms of body composition in order to make the most gains and reach my full potential in powerlifting. P.S. You're really inspiring, and I love reading your training logs on Elite FTS. I can't wait to hear more about your thoughts after you complete your figure show.
You know, this is interesting. It doesn't come up a whole lot with, females and powerlifters. I mean, when you start to get into powerlifting in general, a lot of guys will go through this, concept and this battle of, you know, how much weight do you gain? How does your body composition change with your leverages? Obviously, you know, there's years ago, the idea was to just keep getting bigger so you could lift more weight. You know, when you look at guys like Dave Tate, that's basically what they did. They just fed themselves until the point that their leverages were most advantageous and their lifts kept going up. I think women are in a little bit different boat. You know, there's certainly some advantages to that. But I think you, as far as body composition goes, you have to find the balance between what works for your body type and your body structure. So somebody who has long arms and a short torso versus somebody who's pretty symmetrical versus somebody who has really long legs. You're going to have to find what works best with your body structure and how you perform those lifts. Not everybody squats the same way. Not everybody deadlifts the same way. The other idea too is, and typically powerlifters will talk about this, is when you get to a point to where you are gaining weight, whether it's fat weight, muscle weight, doesn't really matter, but your lifts start going backwards. You've kind of reached that point to where you know where that limit is. Obviously, weight moves weight. So when we talk about powerlifting, gaining weight for most people is typically going to mean making their lifts go up. I myself have been in a position where I've pretty much been the same weight for almost this entire sport. I'm comfortable at this weight. I like where I am body composition wise. You know, like Jen, I tend to float typically between 13 and 15% body fat. So, and I feel comfortable there. I don't have to stress too much. It sounds like she's also able to maintain with relative ease, you know, her body composition. So, there might be periods where you go through a phase. You might put on 5 to 10 pounds. You might lift in the next weight class up. You might set some new PRs. You might try to shoot for a different goal at a different weight class. But ultimately, you have to enjoy where you're at lifting wise, with also how you feel outside of lifting as well. If you're continually gaining weight and your joints ache and everything's hurting all the time, are you willing to make that sacrifice? So I don't know if that's really the best answer to her question, but I think you just kind of have to weigh the pros and cons of like she said, reaching your full potential, but also just in general, just being happy with, you know, with where you're at. Mm-hmm. I could probably certainly gain 30 pounds and, you know, and maybe squat 200 pounds more. But, you know, is that something that I, you know, really want to do at this time? Probably not. So mm-hmm. Once you kind of weigh those pros and cons, I think that'll give you a pretty clear answer.
Now, you mentioned before, you know, what you've been doing with training young athletes. And, you know, I always tell the audience out there, that's probably my favorite part of the day is when I get to go in there and train those, you know, high school athletes. Can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about, you know, just training female athletes and, you know, how it differs from males? Because, you know, I definitely find that, you know, when I'm coaching, you got to kind of coach a little bit differently, you know, in terms of gender roles.
Yeah. I love working with young females because I can kind of see myself back in their shoes, you know, back when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And so it's really pretty cool to be able to give them some of these empowering moments when we were deadlifting with a girl the other day, and she, you know, we kept moving up in weight, and she kept asking me how much weight was on the bar. And I said, don't worry about it. You know, I'll tell you. All of a sudden, before she knew it, she was, you know, deadlifting more than her body weight. And that was really exciting for her. So I think with girls, you definitely have to, it's more about coaching mm-hmm. rather than, you know, guys, you can get in there, you can slam, you know, weight on the bar and you can get in their face. And I think a lot of people, you know, understand that that's what we see in football weight rooms. But girls really appreciate the coaching. They appreciate the small technical things. They really, some of it starts off as a fear. They're afraid of lifting heavier weights. So they just sort of, they accept your coaching criticism and they just, you know, sort of keep moving. But as you encourage them and move them along, and as they start to see their progress that they, you know, what they started with 8 weeks ago and how far they've come to this point, it really starts to click. And like I said, girls just tend to really feed off of the coaching aspect a little bit more. And then as far as training them, there's a lot of similarities. I would say the main difference really is in the coaching style that you give these girls. Obviously, there's, you know, we could get into, you know, ACL injuries mm-hmm. and, you know, injury prevention things that I think need to definitely be addressed with girls. You know, there's mobility and stability issues and all of that. But so as long as we can hammer out a lot of those small details first, then the training, I mean, what exercises to do are really pretty similar. And I don't think that I think everybody that's going to be listening to this show is going to know that girls should be squatting, girls should be deadlifting, they should be doing chin-ups, they should be, you know, doing all of those things. But just, you know, make sure that you know your athlete well, you know where those weaknesses are. fixing the, you know, a lot of young girls have the whole anterior pelvic tilt going on. So if we can address that from the get-go, and strengthen, you know, the areas that need to be strengthened, and then they'll respond really well to the weight room. And I think a lot of, you just have to, that's where the art of coaching comes in, is you have to really be able to, you know, get into these girls' heads and let them know that you care about not just their performance, but you care about them and you care about coaching them, and they understand that.
Can you talk a little bit about how you like to address, you know, definitely one thing that is not only, you know, hard with young female athletes, but even male athletes, is, you know, progressing them with the push-up movement pattern. Is there any kind of tricks that you use to help them progress?
With push-ups, I think the main thing is, you know, getting their body in the right position. Almost every kid that you tell to drop down and do a push-up is going to have that sway back. They're going to have that pelvis tilted. You know, even our young kids at age 8, 9, and 10 just don't have the strength at that point to be able to lower themselves all the way to the ground. I spend a lot of time with their, you know, with their hands on a bench, with their, you know, with their hands elevated. I don't care if it's against a wall. It doesn't, you know, for me, it doesn't matter at what point, you know, what angle they're at, but they need to be able to hold themselves in that position. And we spend a lot of time working on a lot of running mechanics too. So it sort of feeds into that. The position that they're in when we're teaching them their running mechanics is the same position they're going to be in, body wise, when they're doing their push-ups. So we try to make all of that connect so that everything that we're doing is constant. It's constantly being repeated that this is the position you need to be in. I start a lot of my kids, like I said, with their hands elevated. We've got, you know, 24-inch plyo boxes that will have their hands on. I want to make sure that they can keep a straight line with their hips and lower themselves all the way to the box. You know, that's kind of one of the things that I harp on with my kids, is making sure that they, you know, I don't want to see half push-ups. I don't want to see your head looking down at your toes. I don't care if you only get 2 push-ups. It's constantly just repeating those things. Once they can master it with their hands elevated, then we can work to where going down on the knees works for some people. I find that when you do push-ups on the knees, they tend to just kick their hips back, and, you know, and so now you have their hips popped up and they're, you know, and their nose is nose diving towards the ground. So I think you have to find what the athlete is going to respond best to. That's the only tricky thing that I've seen with push-up progressions, is when you drop kids to their knees, they have a hard time keeping the hips in line with the rest of the body, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So that's the only thing with push-ups on the knees that I find that you need to watch out for. So I'd much rather have a kid stay on their toes, but just have their hands elevated and work from that position.
Now, obviously, you know, with all the powerlifting work that you've done, and even with the figure competing, you're doing a decent amount of volume. So can you talk about how you go about addressing recovery work in relation to, you know, really how hard you're training? And that question's from David.
Recovery work is, you know, it's one of those that tends to get put on the back burner a lot, I think. At least in years past with powerlifters. Powerlifters were just known for going in the gym and smashing weights, and if they were beat up, that was just part of the game. And I think in the last several years, it's really come around that your recovery is just as important as everything, you know, as the training and the nutrition and everything. So ART work and, you know, deep tissue and, you know, massage work and chiropractic work and all of those things that happen outside of the gym are really becoming more and more popular. It's helping people with their joints, with their just with all the issues that come along with training. I am probably one of those that, you know, will admit that I probably don't do enough of it, especially when it comes to, you know, getting to a massage therapist. But I think if you can manage the little things on a day-to-day basis, then the big stuff doesn't need to happen quite as often. And of course, that depends on what level you're at. So if you can, you know, take care of small things with hot, cold contrast showers and, you know, there's ice baths and liniments and foam roller work. And I have, you know, I even have some sort of rehab exercises that I do to keep, you know, to keep my back healthy. So I think if you can take the time to do those things on a daily basis, you're going to be prolonged in the sport. And that's one thing that I've sort of gotten complimented on over the years is the amount of years that I've been in the sport, which I've been competing for 13 years, and the lack of injuries that I've had. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't tear pecs and I don't, you know, pop my bicep off deadlifting. So, so those are the things, you know, and people might argue, well, maybe I'm not training hard enough, but I think we've just gotten to the point to where, I train smart. And I think that's really, really important. There's a time to push in the gym and there's a time to back off. And by me doing those little things, by taking care of, you know, my back when my back is, you know, is achy, or taking care of, I've had a hip issue the last, you know, couple months. So taking care of, you know, those small things. But you have to invest in those things. And it takes time. And we've talked about this with other power lifters, you know, it takes time and it takes money, but when you do it, if it truly is something that you want to be able to stay in for a long time, you have to invest those things and, you know, find a good chiropractor, find a good massage therapist, you know, whatever it is that you need. But incorporating those and find the best routine for you. Well, I have some powerlifting friends that will say that they, you know, get massage work every week. I have some that say they get massage work, you know, once a month. So you have to find what's, you know, what works best with your body. But I really think if you can manage the little things on a day-to-day basis, and take care of those things, it makes the long term a lot easier. And on that note is how often somebody competes. Mm-hmm. Is another thing too. I see a lot of people competing quite often, and that surely will, you know, break down your body as well.
For people out there that are, you know, men and women that are looking, you know, to do something kind of like what you did, change things up a little bit with their training, maybe there is some kind of local powerlifting meet that they can enter in. Do you have any like tips or any kind of like guidance that you could give them to get their feet wet, or any kind of resources that they should take a look at in terms of, you know, maybe, you know, like I said, they're thinking about, maybe I can check out this powerlifting meet and, you know, maybe I won't place, but it would be still cool to train for it. Do you have anything, like recommendations or things like that for them?
Yeah. I think it's really awesome that you touched on that, because I think that everybody should find something to train for. Mm-hmm. And for those who have competed, will say the same thing. And it doesn't matter what you competed in. It doesn't matter if it's powerlifting. It doesn't matter if it's figure or bodybuilding or a half marathon. I really don't care what it is you're competing in. But when you train for something, you have a whole different outlook on why you're doing what you're doing. Going to the gym, not that going to the gym didn't have a purpose before, but I always, you know, I have a lot of women that come to me that will say, you know, I've been trying to improve my chin-ups and I really want to be able to do 10 chin-ups on my own. Well, if you have a goal to do 10 chin-ups in 3 months and you keep missing your chin-up day in the gym, do you really think you're going to achieve that goal? Mm-hmm. No. So now you're held accountable to that goal, to that deadline, to that date. So I really think it's really cool for people to compete in something. Now, as far as powerlifting goes, the first time you compete, just go and have fun. The powerlifting community is extremely helpful, very nice. We, you know, sometimes a lot of the people at those meets tend to have really tough exteriors, but they are more than approachable. And I've gone to meets where you know, a new person shows up, they don't have any helpers, they don't have any coaches, and the amount of people that chip in and, you know, give them wrist wraps or give them a belt or, you know, help them out in the warm-up room, it's amazing. So just go and have fun. Powerliftingwatch.com has a list of all of the meets. You can, you know, look by state and by area. So you can get on Powerlifting Watch and find a local meet. A lot of times people will just go and watch and see how they're run and see how they're conducted so they can get an idea. But and people also ask, should I cut weight for my first meet? What should I, you know, should I do all these fancy things? And I always say, no, just go and have fun. Put some numbers on the board, you know, complete the meet. It doesn't matter if you, you know, if you have tons of strength left, you know, afterwards, at least now you have something to build off of. So don't worry about, you know, what numbers you hit. Don't worry about being, you know, the new person. Don't worry about cutting weight. Don't worry about hitting any, you know, records or it's really just about going in and bettering yourself, finding something, you know, challenging and, guaranteed almost every person that goes to their first meet is going to go, wow, I'm capable of so much more. And they're going to sign up for another one. So I definitely encourage people to look into it.
That's a really cool point that you brought up about people who are just, you know, they might be new going into their first meet, but everyone else is super helpful. I find like that's just people that lift in general. Everyone's always trying to help out each other. And it's probably, you know, goes along with the whole idea of people who lift are just happier because they're healthier. And it's just, you know, you never leave the gym feeling worse than when you got in there.
That's true. And I think too, I think we all look back and we were also at
that time. Yeah.
We were a beginner. We walked into the gym and didn't know what we were doing. We've done a million things wrong. We've gone to powerlifting, you know, I remember my first powerlifting meet and, you know, and the people there that were so helpful. So we've all been in those shoes and it's a way. And I think that's one thing that the powerlifting community is really awesome at is continuing to give back to new people coming into the sport.
Let's continue down the list. And we got another question from actually a couple different people, but we'll kind of put it into one question. And this is something that unfortunately I've kind of retired from, but can you provide some tips on how women or people in general can improve their bench press?
Oh, bench press. Absolutely. I mean, anybody can benefit from these, but women in general, women have a harder time with, you know, as they approach their maximal weights. You know, you can put 85 pounds on the bar and a woman can do, you know, 8 reps with that weight. You go up 10 pounds to 95 pounds and she gets crushed. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, central nervous system adaptations and things like that. But with women, one of the biggest things that's helpful is teaching them how to get their entire body tight during the movement. It's pretty common if you've ever seen a woman get close to a maximal weight, you know, the feet start to dance on the floor. The fingers will actually release off the bar. They'll open up the hands. They start to giggle. They're not really quite sure. They just kind of freak out that, oh my gosh, this is heavy. But if we can teach them how to get tight, how to set their feet into the ground, you know, feel that connection from their legs up to their torso, up to their upper body, squeezing the bar really tight with the hands, you know, getting the shoulders pulled back and just overall just staying tight is probably one of the biggest things that I think will help women especially, but even men. And obviously there's a lot of little nuances in there as well, teaching them how to engage the lats when they're lowering the bar, keeping the wrists straight so the wrists don't bend backwards. But generally speaking, staying tight is probably one of the biggest things. Mm-hmm.
Another question from Monique. What are your go-to training splits? How do you like to, you know, set up your programming?
My programming is typically set up, where I have two lower body sessions and I have two upper body sessions. And the way that I've been training for years with, you know, with several modifications along the way, is basically I have a, I have a heavy day, which is a day for me to, pick a variation exercise. So it's not a regular back squat and it's not a regular deadlift. So I'm doing rack pulls, I'm doing deficit deadlifts. I might do a front squat or safety bar squat, something like that, to help build a weakness that I'm trying to improve on. So that's usually a heavy day. Same thing with the bench press. I'll have a heavy bench day. And then my other day for lower body and upper body is I do a lot of dynamic work and speed work, which is kind of a hot topic right now. You know, does it work? Does it work for power lifters? Does it work for raw lifters? But I think the important thing with that day, whether you're doing dynamic work for speed, trying to produce force, whatever the case may be, is that is a really important, what we would call a skill day. I have a lot of my clients who I do training programs for, and even for myself, when I'm doing dynamic squats, that's a skill day. It's a day for me to master and, you know, really hone in on that skill. And I think that that's something that, a lot of beginner and intermediate lifters really need to get back to. Well, I think what happens is we, a lot of new people tend to just, well, I, in order for me to squat more weight, I just need to keep squatting heavy. And then they work up to a max and then they fail. But they're having a lot of technical issues. So by doing the variation exercises one day, now we can fix whatever is their weak point, whatever's holding them back. But then on the other day, now we're doing sub-max work. You might be working, you know, in the 80-85% range, and you may only be doing doubles or triples, but now it's a chance for them to work on that skill and perfect it. I mean, for me being in the sport for 13 years, I couldn't even tell you the amount of squats that I've done to perfect my technique. So I think when you look at it as skill work and perfecting that without having to go overboard or max out every single week, that's really going to help a lot of lifters. And so that's typically my go-to type of training as far as powerlifting goes. Obviously for the figure stuff I'm doing right now is, you know, is your typical bodybuilding, is your typical bodybuilding splits. But for powerlifting, I think you need to have, you know, have your heavy day where you're going to bring up some weaknesses with some variation lifts, and then have your, you know, you have your skill day where you're going to work on, you know, sub max weights, but perfecting that technique, that's going to take people a long way.
Okay. You brought up, you know, another thing that I kind of wanted to hit on, you know, going between the differences in between the two kind of programs that you've been doing. How has your conditioning changed going from, you know, powerlifting standard and then going into the, I didn't have enough caffeine today, folks. I'm sorry. I'm having problems talking today, and I just lifted before this, so I'm a little drained. But anyways, in terms of the figure competing, how has your conditioning changed between the two, if it has?
My conditioning, this is definitely, it's definitely, there's a little more conditioning work involved. And my powerlifting training is kind of the same way. Typically when the farther I'm out from a meet, the more conditioning work I'll do. And I don't typically mean, you know, going out and running or doing cardio, but I mean, even as far as the amount of, workload I can handle with my, you know, with my squats and things like that. It's just, it's different at different times of the year and different times of the training cycle. When I'm farther out from a meet, I'm typically doing, 10 to 15 sets of two for my, you know, dynamic work, with short rest periods. So less than 60 seconds of rest. So that kind of keeps me in shape, keeps my volume high. As I get closer to a meet, that is not as important because you're starting to get more specific. You're really getting into that skill work. The conditioning work, as far as, I mean, for this, the other day I had a set of, I had four sets of squats, and my last set was a, you know, this giant drop set of squats. I had a set of 8, dropped the weight, set of 10, dropped the weight, and then a set to failure. And I got to that last set and realized that my lungs almost gave out more than my legs did. So it's definitely, it's different conditioning, and I don't really have a choice with the short amount of prep time that I have. Mm-hmm. But I just, you just kind of roll with it. I do have some, you know, HIIT intervals and things like that, that I'm doing right now to, you know, in preparation for the show. But, I'm kind of somebody, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, where I'm at, body weight and body composition wise. I can tend to stay in pretty decent shape. I'm on the floor coaching for several hours a night, mm-hmm. You know, with young kids. So, I mean, I know it's not, you know, crazy conditioning, but you know, that those kind of little things definitely keep me, you know, keep me in enough shape that I'm never, you know, completely and totally fried. So
yeah, it adds up. I would probably never want to hire a coach that just kind of like stands there while they're coaching a group of athletes and, not really, getting a little bit of a heart rate, increase. So
exactly.
Well, finally, before we let you go today, you know, again, where can people kind of stay up to date with what you're up to, and you know, where's the best place to kind of follow what you're doing?
The best place, I mean, there's a couple places. I have my regular website, which is julialedusky.com. You know, I put regular content up there as far as you know, training and nutrition things. There's a calendar up there with the various places that I'll be speaking in the future. I have a lot of speaking engagements coming up as well. As far as my training goes, I put my training on eliteFTS.com. So people always ask, you know, what I'm doing, how I'm doing with figure. So they can always find that there. And, you know, I kind of, you know, rant, especially lately, about a lot of the, you know, issues with figure, and I've been practicing posing and those things. So you can kind of get into my mind.
How's it going? Is it starting to, click a little bit?
A little bit, you know, and funny that the more people I talk to, I'm like, man, I'm like, this posing stuff is the hardest part. The training is easy. The diet is easy. Mm-hmm. This posing stuff is killing me. And, but it's one of those where it's so out there and so out of what I'm used to doing and out of my comfort zone that it's mentally challenging. And I encourage people to find something like, you know, similar concept, that something that's challenging for them that they didn't think that they could ever do. So it's rough, but I'm getting there.
Yeah. I remember watching in like Pumping Iron, Arnold spending hours just like learning how to pose. It's nuts.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I had a friend tell me the other day, you know, practice walking in my heels every single day. And wow. So I'm getting used to that as well. But I also have, you know, I have various articles, you know, that I you know, I write for eliteFTS.com as well. I write for Dangerously Hardcore. So, and I have, you know, a few other, you know, guest things popping up. So usually people can find me on my website on eliteFTS.com. And you can always, I'm always active on, you know, Facebook and Twitter, which, you know, they can find me on, and that usually leads them to, you know, to what I'm doing. So those are the best places they can reach me.
Awesome. Well, Julia, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me with even my foggy headed, caffeine free body today. I'm trying to deload off the caffeine this week. That's why I've been a little bit more sluggish, but I appreciate you being patient with me. And again, like I said, taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks, Kevin, for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. That's it, everyone. Don't forget to check out the FitCast on iTunes. You can check out the fitcast.com and subscribe through there as well. I'm going to be throwing up some blogs, and also check us out on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. Thanks, everyone, and have a great week.